Welcome to Escapes. I'm Erica Hemphill, and I am thrilled to invite you on this empowering journey. Join me as we explore the art of escaping self-doubt, the constraints of the 9-to-5 grind, the false realities that hold us back. We'll empower you to embrace entrepreneurship, motherhood, and co-working with your partner, and to boldly step into leadership roles that were once thought unattainable. Escapes is more than a podcast. It's a community of resilient women and men who are rewriting their stories, chasing their dreams, and smashing through glass ceilings. Together, we'll share stories of triumph, strategies for success, discuss our failures, and use insights from remarkable individuals who have paved their own paths to greatness. So join me, Erica Hemphill, as we unlock the doors to your unlimited potential. It's time to escape, empower, and embrace. Oh, and elevate. Your adventure begins now. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Escapes. Thank you for escaping for 1 hour this week with me to see what we've got in store. So I am so excited today. I have somebody with me that he is a entrepreneur. He is a real estate, in my opinion, guru, and he is also an investor. And I am so super excited that he has taken time to come and sit with me. And he also is my punching bag sometimes whenever we want to argue or just have difference of opinions. But he is so much fun to be around, and I'm excited to introduce you guys to John Ignatius. And welcome.
Hello.
Oh my goodness, I'm so excited you're here. So are you nervous?
I am nervous. This is my second kind of thing, but yeah, we'll get this.
Yes.
We'll get it.
Yes.
So lay it on me, go.
No. So introduce yourself. Tell everybody. Okay. I know all about you, but I can't wait for everybody to dive in. So tell us a little bit about John.
All right. So my name is John Ignatius. I end up spelling my name a lot for people because it's so crazy sounding, but I've been in sales since I was a kid. My first job, I was in sales. I started off hustling downtown in New Orleans, working at the aquarium, hustling memberships. It was my first sales opportunity. Okay. Then I sold shoes, I've sold knives, I sold cell phones, I've sold.
So it's in your DNA.
Yes, I've always been in sales. So, and then in adult life, I sold security equipment. I mean, just anything you can think of. But in adult life, I ended up getting into the real estate deal, and it's I guess it fit and stuck and I've done well in it. And so
how did you end up in real estate? Like, you came from, you said you were in New Orleans.
Yeah.
So how did you end up in Hammett, Louisiana?
Yeah, so at the time, which is good to know for people who know the Hammett area, but like I was living in New Orleans. I was living in Old Metairie, a really expensive part of town. I was right out of college. And, you know, I got an MBA thinking I'd get out of college and I was going to be flooded with all these awesome jobs.
That were going to pay us
that
big
were gonna
bucks,
pay
right?
Me hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they were just going to want this bright, you know, guy that whatever. But nope, that's not what happened. I got offered $27,000 at a bank with opportunity to make a little more than that. So I'm like, okay. So
we got to do something different.
I got to do something different. So I was in retail management for a bit, and then realized that, you know, even though the money was a little bit better, it wasn't going to be something I wanted to do for long term. And I had decided to move to the Hammond area because in Hammond, there's something called an RD loan. At the time, you know, on a limited income of $40,000 to $50,000 as a single person, and very little savings, it was an opportunity to buy a house in Tangipahoa Parish that you couldn't get in the New Orleans area for zero money down. So that's what brought me to this area. And when I did that, I bought a new construction home and I got to see, I was in a sales job at the time actually for a distributor, and I wasn't really, felt like I was complacent. And the sales rep in the community, I got to know through building my, getting my house finished and all that kind of stuff. And then my real estate agent was a good friend of mine, seeing what, he was doing. And I realized working for a builder, it was operated a little bit differently. It was a little bit more secure because, you know, they were kind of bringing the clients in for you and you just had to sell them, you know? So I didn't even know that aspect. In Louisiana at the time, there wasn't a lot of production building going on. You see that a lot in Texas and Florida. And it had just started to kind of hit and they were doing really well. So I went and interviewed And the rest is history. So I started a new construction.
Awesome. Awesome. So if you didn't catch this, I'm going to rewind just a little bit. He gave a really good nugget in there for everybody that if you live in a rural area, there are loans that are called rural development loans for 0% down. So many clients that I deal with or that you probably come across, they don't know what their options are for loans. And so there's your little first nugget for our first part of the day is that rural development loans do exist for 0% down, obviously, depending on certain aspects of financials and that.
Right.
And we can get into that another day or later.
Well, and look, I just want to say this too. It's like, you really don't know what you don't know. Where there is a will, there is a way. I don't know who told me that. Maybe it was my grandma or somebody, but where there's a will, there's a way. You can talk to banks. You can talk to sellers. Yeah. If you have a really good real estate agent, a really good lender, somebody that's really experienced, you can buy a house. And if you can't now, we'll figure out the timeline of when you can.
Right. How to set you up, right?
Yeah, because there's so many things. You know, there's a motivation for people to be able to put people in homes, and you know, there's always a loophole.
Yeah, that's right. And look, most people want to help people, right? Yeah. That are in your industry, that are in my industry. That's what we're there for, to help people. So there's your first nugget. Write it down, come back to it. There's your first nugget. So we've gotten onto the North Shore. We bought a house and now we're doing sales for new construction.
Yeah. So, so that taught me, so working in new home construction for a production builder, basically you're in a model home and people come into the neighborhood and you have to sell them on wanting to be in that community. And also, different floor plans that you offer and really selling a vision, because all you have to show is the model home. You don't have to show their actual house, and they can have all different versions of what they're looking at. And so you're selling a little bit more than just, I guess, a normal resale house from the standpoint of you're also selling what's behind the walls too, right? So it's a little bit more of a all around, I guess I got some well-rounded experience.
That's supposed to say knowledge. You actually got to see the process and probably walk your clients through a little bit more process than what you do right now.
Right.
You're doing a resale now on a home.
Yeah.
Before, you were probably talking and educating them even some on the building process.
Which helps you to know, even in a resale, to know what to look for that might be not done right or whatever when you're helping a client, because I've been around construction side enough to have a general idea. Now, I'm by no means a contractor. I can't even hang a picture on the wall, but I can get around to kind of know what's up. So
I love it. Okay. So how long did you do that? And then tell me how you either started or got involved with Brookshire, because that's where you are now and you're a broker. Correct?
Okay. Yes. So perfect. I'm going to try and make it a little quick and not sound boring, but I think it's important let me just kind of tell you how that happened. So I was doing really well in sales and I felt that I had kind of capped off where I was. If I went into management, I probably wasn't going to make quite as much money. And, although I would learn, I didn't feel that it was an opportunity for me to really grow where I wanted to in that job. So I had an opportunity to go and take a position as a team leader, which is considered the CEO of the Keller Williams franchise, which is, one of the larger, brokerages in the United States. And I took that position knowing that I was going to probably have a pay cut. But at the time, I didn't really need the money. I was more interested in growing my leadership skills. And I did that for 8 months. And I was commuting to the Baton Rouge area to do it. And I got fired.
Wait, I didn't know that. You have to just like give me a nugget on that.
Yeah. So I went in there. I mean, within the first week, the accountant for the office had not paid the light bill and our lights were getting shut off. I had to fire somebody. I never really fired anybody before. And then the ownership, there was quite a few owners. I think I went in there with not a lot of management skills, wanting to change everything at one time and really rocking the boat a little, probably too much. And, you know, I don't know. I can tend to be a little bit more overkill than underkill. And I think it worked to my disadvantage. However, I learned from that experience that I, for one, jumped into something maybe I wasn't quite ready for that stretched me a little bit.
I love that too. That's a nugget too. Because there are so many people, even when they go into entrepreneurship or even if they're going into management, they think that they're ready, but they really don't know what all entails that. And then if you're a little bit uneasy with yourself, the stress that comes with that is very uneasy. Yeah. Or at least I know that from starting my own business. When you don't know what you don't know, you either have to educate yourself or you have to take a step back and be open to saying, I don't know, I don't understand, and I'm going to educate myself.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do sometimes.
Well, look, I got fired. And that same weekend, I had a weekend trip to New York planned. I was so rattled that I left my wallet in a New York cab. I find out that my dog, who I left with my friends, had eaten all their Christmas candy on top of the counter and was about to die at the veterinarian. So I'm losing my dog. I didn't have a wallet. I'm in the middle of New York. I have no job when I go home. Don't know what's going to happen. So life was, in that moment, what the hell I'm going to do, you know?
Right. Like, what are we?
But what I will tell you, in my experience, though, by the way, I am in my 40s, but I feel like I'm 26 emotionally. Just
amen.
You
know? So, I'm going back there.
So, but I will tell you that that the thing that I have learned is to fail forward. You know, I think it's important to get in the game regardless. And if we're not perfect. If you mess up, learn from it and move forward. And I think that's ultimately, that was a stepping point for me to be where I am today, which ends up way better than I was.
So I know you and I know your team now, and you're going to get to give us some information on that too. But I can tell you that I know that you're an amazing leader. Your team that works with you now, they love working with you. They might want to kill you on certain days, because you're going to see through our conversation today that John is very high strung most of the time. And that is totally okay. That's his personality. But the team that works for you and around you, they just praise you and how well you work with them and allow them to be creative and to be their own leaders too. I love that.
Yeah. So. Well, a friend of mine told me this the other day, which I think is also a really cool nugget. It probably came from a book. And by the way, I don't read. I really just learn from all my smarter friends that are around me, which I think is good. Because I do believe whoever your five closest people do make who you are.
So, yes, I agree.
So, when growing a team, which over time that has been learning, you know, learning whatever you call it. But I feel like I have a really good core now for quite some time. But if you can replicate you always want to have an extension of you to expand your business. You only have so many hands and you're going to be so many places. And so it's important to find people that can really maybe take off the plate some of the things that maybe you're not as good at, or that you just don't have the time for because you have to focus on other things to keep growing. If you can find somebody that can do your job 80% that you would have done it, you need to take that as 100% success.
Yes, I love that. Say it again for everybody.
So 80%, if they can do the job, 80% is the world according to John, or world according to Erica. 80%, then you need to take that as 100% success. And yes, realize that it's just part of growth, that you can't always have your hands in every little single thing.
And if they share the same mission and core values that you are setting your standard and your business standard too. I think that's my number one thing now. When I look back, anyone that's going to be on my team or work for me has to share the same mission and values that I want to incorporate with my clients, with my community, because if they don't, then they really truly aren't an extension of what my vision is.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, like the foundation has to be strong with the people that you go into business with. I think the baseline of what we're about, I think, needs to be there for sure. And sometimes you really that's also I think I'm probably, I can tell you all the I'm very critical of myself. I tend to be really bad at things and then really good at other things. There's really typically that's how I operate. I feel that I'm pretty good at reading a person or understanding where they're coming from on an interview or whatever, but you can always get thrown for a loop. You can always think that you're aligned, and then when you get them in and you realize, okay, well, this isn't quite how I thought this person thought, or I thought,
right.
You know, so
that's, I think I told you the story before I hired an assistant here. I had this application and it was like perfect on paper. I had a phone interview with her. She sounded great on the phone. Then we did a group interview and she even was like very good during the group interview. I had three other business owners here. It was amazing. Her last interview, she came with fuzzy slippers on.
Yeah. Well, wait, were they like this?
No.
These are shoes. They're just
like, shoes. They are shoes. But I am not kidding. When she walked in the front door, she had like a very presentable, like cute dress on, but then she had like fuzzy slippers, and it just took me back to.
What did you say? How did you fix it?
I continued the interview.
Yeah.
I did continue the interview, but then when she left, I just knew that something wasn't right, because after all of those perfect.
You're damn right. Your shoes weren't right. You can't be walking up here with the bad shoes.
Okay, so everybody that's listening, John knows me very well. I like fashion. He likes fashion. And what would you have said?
Wait, I'm so pissed that we're not on video, because if people don't know you, they don't know this cool hair that you have.
Well, there is a picture of me for the podcast.
There is.
You do know.
Yeah. Okay, good. Because yeah. I'm glad. Because that's like your signature.
You know I love what I mean? It. I love it.
It's like our boss. Cool, like this cool signature.
This is why John and I get along so well. So, yes, the fuzzy slippers. I'm stuck on that for a minute. But yes, I had to tell laughing because it made me really go back to think, okay, if she really showed up like that, was all the paper and was all the smoke and mirrors during the interview actually her? Or was that just what she needed to get the job? And so it didn't work out. But I think you're right. Your team represents you, and you have a truly wonderful team. So tell us how we got to that team, because you.
Yes. Okay. So got fired and then realized that, okay, well, I'm going to go and put all the things that I learned in leadership into place and just do it for my own team rather than the whole brokerage. I'm going to take all those things that I was taught that apparently I wasn't that good at, but I learned from whatever. So maybe taking on a team of 80 people was not, I wasn't ready for that, but I was ready to build my own because I learned some skills from where I was. So I went into real estate as a single agent, and I was scared of being poor, which, by the way, I'm completely, now this is not healthy, so don't take this, but I'm driven. You're supposed to be driven internally with your inner peace and like your big why and all this stuff. And look, that's what you're supposed to do. But I'm externally driven. I'm competitive and I'm fearful of being poor all the time. So pain is what drives me. Where that comes from, we could get into that another day. But
that is your why then.
Yeah.
But that truly is your why.
To not be poor.
Yes. Because I know you and some of your story. I don't know all of it, but your why, that is your why. You had some things that previously happened or that you went through in your life, and you don't want to go back there. That's totally cool to have as a why.
I just want independence. I don't want ever money to tell. I don't want somebody to say, you know what? You can't get that scan for possible cancer because you have to wait.
Trauma. You're so
we can't. I don't want that to happen. I'm going to say, you know what? I'm giving you $1,000 more. You freaking scam me and tell me I have the issue. Like, I need to know.
He wants to use that as an example, but let's use this as an example.
I want to go on vacation when I want to go on vacation.
He just got back from Greece, guys. He just got back from Greece.
Both are very important.
Okay. So let's not use the scan as the example to the man that went and lived in New York for a few months.
All the time, though, is like people get held up on money things in life that are really serious that they should not be. And I don't want to be ever that person, or my family to be that person, or anybody that I know to be that person. I want to be Big Daddy who has, oh, you need that? Here you go.
So you want to be, Joe. You want to be Joe. No, look, everybody is different. I think, look, if everybody's being truthful, like if they really get down to the nitty gritty of it, most people start businesses because they want more freedom and they want more money. The difference is, in my opinion, and only Erica Hemphill's opinion, and you can agree or disagree, is that how do you get there? The people that give up or get too fearful of the goals that they set, they quit. There's going to be failures. I've lost money. I've lost projects. I've lost money on projects.
Okay, you know what? And you know what? And this is what I have to say about that. My fear of not having experienced or not having, of missing out or of not doing or of not tried is stronger than the fear of losing.
Right. That is your drive. it drives you to keep going and wanting to do more and do more investments and do more with your real estate license. I agree to that. I see that. I know that about you. Yeah. He's so much fun. You have to look him up on Facebook. He hosts like the best parties around. He knows it. People have done interviews on him, asking him about his parties. He loves it. He's smiling. He loved that little nudge of, yes.
Nudge away.
Exactly.
Just mind if you do.
So the team. You know that we've made this team. We have this great, amazing real estate.
So what happened was I went into and I sold. I had 46 sales my first year in real estate by myself, and I realized that I needed to assistance because you can only be so many places at one time. And I learned through where I was how to form a team and all that. So go on to do that, and trial and error, but. This is for real estate agents out there. This is the one thing anybody that is growing their business that I could give as a tidbit of advice is I think real estate agents in general, we want to recreate the wheel. We want to be inventive. We want to be different. We want to da 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 da. But there's a lot of things that if you just follow
stick to the basics,
stick to what has worked for so many on the basics and get your foundation strong and then be creative. Don't be creative to create your foundation. Get your foundation that's already, there's models out there. And one big one is your first hire should not be another salesperson to partner with. It should be an assistant that can take off the administrative work to where you can go and do more of the selling and meeting with your clients and building those relationships, because that's what's going to bring the money in.
And the referrals.
So first hire, all I can say, if you're making 30 to 40 sales a year, you should be hiring your first assistant. That's your first.
Yeah. Love it. Okay. There's your second nugget, folks. There's your second nugget. I love that. So John, one thing that some people or a lot of our listeners are not going to know about you is that you also are an investor. And we love that here in Hammond. You have multiple properties here in downtown Hammond. And can you tell me how you started in that? Like, what was your drive on that?
So I'm always, well, One of my big drives is to obviously be financially secure. And a friend of mine, where I don't know if I should even name his name or not, because it's going to go to his head if he ever listens to this. But he's a good friend of mine and competitor in real estate. And he had started investing earlier than I had. And I saw what he did. And I was starting to make income to where I felt like I could do that. And so I bought my first house off of Facebook for $15,500, which you can't even buy a car, I don't think, these days.
No.
So, and then terribly renovated it multiple times. I was probably in it for 70 by the time I sold it, but
I did not know him at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not you.
It was not me.
God knows who it was. It was a bunch of different people from nowhere with no licenses. Oh yeah. Whoever I found in a Lowe's parking lot, I took and said, please, you know, do work for me. But so that house I rented for like $1,100 a month, and I kept it for like 5 or 6 years. So, and I recently just sold it to somebody who is very committed to this community and is going to revamp that house the way it really should be for a homeowner and not a renter. So I'm excited to see.
To see that transition. Yeah. I would love to see that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And so if you had a nugget to drop for someone that wants to invest, because look, I think our generation is more open to that, right? I look at my parents and my grandparents, and they don't want to have any debt. I think they still might put money in their mattresses and in books.
Yeah.
But when
I'm Italian,
yeah, 100%. I dyed this hair blonde.
They definitely went through the recession. What's the thing in the 20s that was really bad?
Uh huh. You're asking me to go history now.
Not the recession. Is it recession?
Yeah. Probably.
No. You know, like when everybody was poor.
That is a recession.
No, it's worse than a recession. Depression, the Great Depression.
Yeah, Great Depression.
That's how I lived the Great Depression.
Oh my goodness. But I think they're more afraid. And I think our generation is definitely less fearful of that. And we're more open to using our money to help us get to generational wealth. And when I look at you, I see that you're building that. So what would you tell someone that is trying to get there, trying to get their first property?
Okay. So what I will tell you, so actually I kind of misspoke. That was the first property that I bought as an investment, but the first rental property that I had was my home that I lived in that I moved out of to move somewhere else. So when you buy your first house, or when you buy as a owner occupant, you're going to get a better rate. It's easier to get financing, or it's the most traditional way to get financing. So, and you can live in it. Usually you have to check your, I don't want to commit mortgage fraud, but I mean, usually after a year of living there, if you move out of it, you can keep it as a rental.
Right.
So that is the easiest way to first get in. Or I would even say better than that, which I did not need to do this, but it was one of my considerations, and a lot of people do, is buy a multifamily where you live on one side.
Yes.
And rent the other, subsidizing your income, subsidizing your rent or your note, because they're helping to pay for what it costs you to own that place. And then after you're in for a year, they can take that income and add it to whatever your income is so that you can afford to buy somewhere else and then have those two spots to rent.
And so that's what I coach people on. When they call me and ask, Erica, how are you buying investment properties? That's the first thing. Garland and I did not do it that way either. Mm-hmm. But if I would coach anyone, I would tell them multifamily, duplex, townhouse, buy it, live in one side, rent the other side out, subsidize your mortgage. And then you also get a write-off there, because then if you start an LLC, then you can do the write-offs for the office, the internet, phones, ... but talk to your accountant for the details on that. But that is, in my opinion, the best way.
That's the best way. And then the other good old fashioned way, which can take a little longer, is just save your freaking money.
Yeah, people don't like to do that.
I know people don't like to do that, but you don't have to. Now, typically for an investment property, you're going to need 20% down. You know, that's the typical. Now, there's other ways of getting rental properties. There's loans out there that even are based off of how much income are coming into those properties. The deal is you usually have to get a really good deal on it for it to make sense for it to work. But typically for an investment, you need 20% down. But for your first home to move into, so if you moved into a duplex, you can get loans as low as 3% down. So you buy a $300,000 house, you're going to only have to have $9,000 put down. So that's a little bit easier to save. So save your money too. I mean, that's important. You don't want to go into something with nothing, but you don't need to necessarily save that 20%. And that's why it's an advantage to move into your first house. And the other thing is, which I find must be a generation thing, is that people want so much immediate gratification, and they want their first house to be their dream house.
Yeah, we see that.
This is your stepping stone. Nothing worth having comes fast and easy.
Yeah, I say that a lot, especially when clients come and sit down, and especially in the market that we're in. Depending on when you're listening to this podcast, we're in October 2023. Interest rates are roughly floating around 7.5%, 8%. And we are having to re-educate and change mindsets in my office on, 2 years ago at 3.75% or 4%, 4,000 square feet was obtainable. Now that has to change, you know, and everybody wants to say, but Erica, this is not forever home. Well, maybe we need to readdress that.
Now, when you get divorced, now when you somebody gets hurt, you're like, what are you talking about forever? There's nothing forever. 7 years, that's your forever.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I haven't made it to 7 in any house that I've lived in.
Well, there you go.
None. So. And I'm on my 5th. Yeah, and I think if I told Garland right now I wanted to sell our house,
he's like, oh.
He might use the word divorce. But I'm all about it. I love change. I love to build.
Well, look, one of my agents was telling me about an open house the other day. Somebody came to it. I'm like, well, what'd they think of the house? Oh, nothing good to say about it. I'm like, what do you mean nothing good to say about it? Where were they coming from? Oh, well, they didn't like it because there was still popcorn ceiling, which this house was not this house is a nice house, actually. It just, had some little dated things. And they just had a bunch of things. I said, where did they come from? Oh, she was living in an apartment. I said, All right. So then we talked to them about maybe you're paying somebody else's bill living in an apartment.
That's right.
It might be pristine, clean, and whatever, but you're paying somebody else's bill. Wouldn't you rather own your ceilings?
And use that tax write-off.
I mean, come on. Like,
but okay, so let's debate that.
HGTV is really, making the world think.
You're sitting in a builder's office right now. You know, look, I've built for John too, FYI, by the way. So he knows my favorite statement is that I have a love-hate relationship with HGTV and Pinterest because everybody wants that. But they think that is very inexpensive. And most of the things that they look at or see or watch, it's just not.
You can have a tile that's $2 a square foot, and you can have a tile that's 100 and something dollars a foot, depending on
that's
it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
I mean, it's
my favorite thing to tell clients that come in and they want champagne, but they might not have that budget for that.
You give them that grape juice, huh?
I try to tell them, let's compromise on certain things. Let's focus on what are the most important things to you. Is it the square footage? Because that's where your appraisal value is going to happen. And then you can add that secondary custom shower and the secondary bathroom later if you wanted to do that. Let's compromise so that we can get you the majority of what you want. And I'm sure that your agents are having to do that in this market too. They're having to say, look at the price point of the house that you're getting and the square footage that you're getting. And let's talk about how you can remodel or do some of these small updates at a later time.
I'm glad you're saying that as a builder and as a real estate agent. That is why it's really important to have people that are experienced and know what they're talking about in those fields.
Yes.
Because balance is important. Because if you ever go to sell your place, so I went on an appointment the other day and, we're going to be listing a house, and it's an awesome house. And I had a conversation with the owner, and I said, all the things that you're telling me about your house are awesome. I'd be very confident that my house is never going to fall on my head because you are meticulous on what's behind the walls. I mean, he had a well system that he bragged on that filtered water to where he was going to get to the level of the sauna.
Right.
And all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And a solar panel that heated up his everything that you can imagine, bell and whistle on the interior walls. And then when you look in the house, and it was a very nice house, but it's not necessarily updated to today's standard. I said, women are gonna be the ones to buy houses. So all these things that you've put a lot of money into that make your house an awesome house are not gonna necessarily be appreciated as much. They might be appreciated. I mean, who knows who will appreciate it in a couple, but typically people like the pretty.
When they walk in, they want the
First impression.
That's right.
So, and what I'll tell you is, like, when it comes to energy efficiency, you can make your house sealed tight, most energy efficient, but for the amount of money that you spend on the front end, are you going to save that amount of money on the long end for doing all those things? There's a healthy balance.
But not only that, but when you resell value, the person that's going to buy it really might not.
They're not going to care as much.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're going to care about the finishes.
Yes. So while both are important, to go so heavy in one thing and lack on the other, you know, to really have an understanding of what the market appreciates.
Yeah.
And what is maybe, what is needed versus what is wanted.
Oh, it's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
You know this. Every client that walks in here, they get the same question. When we come for our discovery meeting, what are your needs and what are your wants? And we will try to accommodate and mesh them together, but I can't promise that I can accommodate them unless you give me a budget that can accommodate both columns. And most of the time there's compromise. And I think that's with a resale. I think that's with a custom build. Everybody has a budget. Everybody has a stopping point somewhere. You just have to find a balance of what that is and how to maneuver and talk through how we get there, I think.
All right, let me ask you this question.
What we got?
How many people, or do you even know, have you ever had a client that actually met budget, that actually was under budget?
Yes. One. I had one that was under budget. I wrote them a refund check for $9,000 out of their last draw.
Wow. Where do I meet them?
4 years ago. No, but I have some clients now because of the market that we're in, right? I mean, it's true that are getting very close and they are watching those allocations very, very close.
But as you're building and as you're real, like you can plan, plan, plan. And as the process goes on, you hear, oh shit, well, I really kind of want this.
So I have clients like you, my darling, mm-hmm. that see things and then want change and then want that. Cause you have that longevity thought. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's use the quadruplex as an example. You wanted to make sure that when we built that quadruplex together, that long-term you wanted it to stand the test of time for design. You wanted the materials that were in there to be what people were going to want to see, that wow factor when they walked in. Right. On the other hand, I have some clients that look at it and say, Erica, I want to be more budget conscious because I want the bigger house. I want the
square footage. They need the space.
They need the space. So they're okay with looking at a $3 floor or a $4,000 lighting allowance. They're okay with that. And what I try to tell my clients is that I still will provide you a beautiful product. You just have to not go to the showroom floor and fall in love with a $500 light. And we try to walk clients through that process. But I think that a lot of clients find themselves right along with social media doing the compare game. Oh, well, my neighbor did this. Or when I go to my friend's house, it looks like this. I try to tell my clients, and then even people that I just talked to in the community, focus on what you want in your house. Don't scroll all day long and look at other houses because you can always find stuff that's wrong. You can find stuff that's wrong at your house that you want to update. I can find things at my house that I want to update. Fall in love with what your why is on why you're buying the house. Is it the size? Is it the property? Is it the outdoor space? You can update faucets. You can update bathrooms later. Let's focus on how we get you the most out of that want column and needs column. That is my goal as a builder. And I think that if we continue to talk about those things with clients, whether that's on the real estate side or the building side, that we'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Well, I think one of the most important things when building or even when buying a house to me, besides location, because you know,
I love location.
Location is like key for your value, but the layout. It's really important that the layout makes sense because it's a real pain in the ass to change layout later on. It's gonna be expensive.
Here, look, here's a look, I told everybody when I started this podcast that I was gonna be vulnerable, real, and raw. Let's talk about the layout of the quadruplex. The bedroom, mm-hmm. the one bedroom. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was small with the door going into the bathroom. I love the layout, but what happened was when we put the staircase in, it made the room smaller.
Yeah.
And it was the afterthought. And as a builder, look, we had architects that worked with us. I have architects that work in house with me. It was just once it was built, it was a little bit smaller than what we thought.
Yeah.
Now we were also on a very small lot. So we were only working with so much space and then obviously parking because we are in downtown. So we had restrictions and servitudes, but I look back at every project after I finish and I say, where could we have learned? Where could we get better?
Right.
What can we do? And I can tell you, I'm meeting with someone next week about some duplexes and quadruplexes. And the first thing I told them is that if we're going to do the quadruplex and you want the staircase inside, then we have to ensure the bedrooms are bigger. And I learned that from working with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's always harder to think about it after the fact.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and when you walk through something, I'm pretty visual, but like you can look at a plan all day and think in your head a little bit differently. And then you get in there and you're like, it's not quite exactly as I envisioned it, but.
It's beautiful. You know. Everybody says it's beautiful.
Yeah.
The pictures.
Yeah. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in general. Yeah. Just in general, looking at plans. You know, it's not like the real thing when you start to get into it. And then I'm always weirded out. I've always been weirded out. Like, why do rooms look smaller when like the flooring's not in? Yeah.
Or, and then you put the flooring.
And you're like, oh, wait, now it's okay. Like, it makes no sense to me. Like, I'm like,
spatially. Frame it up. When we first started building, when you pour the concrete, when we first started doing this, I can remember calling Garland and saying, I think they messed up the slab. It looks really small. And then the walls go up and I'm like, oh,
wow, that makes sense.
I know, it looks good. I love that. I love my job. So one thing that I feel like you and I love to talk about, to have conversation about, is partnerships between realtors and builders. Because I think we have a good relationship. We agree to disagree on certain things, but how do you think we, because I'll use we as an example, advocate to other builders and to other real estate agents to have better relationships with builders, to have those harder conversations on why is it different? How do we merge that? What would you?
Well, so this is where the, let me say where I think the pain point is, so we understand how to merge. Okay. So, or how we can merge, as you smile at me. We can always like delete this if we really get bad.
No, we're not. We are not.
So the deal is, oftentimes I would say it is probably easier in my brain from the builder standpoint to do things the way that they choose to, and to do have their processes and have their contracts and all these kind of things that they know what they're getting into, because that's their deal. That's their box, right?
That's their niche.
That's their thing. Well, when typically, and this is in real estate how it goes, is that whoever is selling the product has to pay the agents. But right. So, and the reason for that is because they're able to take it out of the cost of the house as a payback, whereas the buyer side may not have the cash up front to pay for the agency to have for the agent to represent them. So it always the way which is right now actually in the nation, this is a big conversation of how this should really work out, but. The deal is that it has to come out of the sale, which at the end of the day, a builder could look at that's money that came out of their pocket that they could have made themselves and just handled the whole thing themselves. But coming from the other side of things, we trust Erica that you would do all the great things. You're a good builder. You have a good reputation. That's why I would refer you to begin with. Right. So, however, there's always things that happen that people may not agree on. And that is when it is a benefit for a buyer to have representation. But from the builder side, well, I like things to go my way.
I think it's necessarily my way. And look, just for our listeners today, just that you know, John and I have had this conversation multiple times, and it's a conversation that we don't typically agree on, but we are both very much friends and adults that we can talk about it. And I have analyzed it multiple times because I do see things from both sides. I truly do. I look at it that not that it has to be done my way, but if I take that responsibility on, I'm taking the responsibility to contractually be obligated to provide the services that I say I'm going to with the contractual agreement of what I'm providing, the house, the design, my warranties. So their representation at that point when it's transferred over, and this is the part that I think you and I disagree on, is that when that transfer happens, there's really no need for a real estate agent to be involved anymore. You're not going to go out there and go look at the property and walk through and communicate with the client on what they're picking out and make sure they're on budget. You're not going to have access to all of that. So when you transfer them over to us, because now it is a true referral, it's not a sell. You're not selling the house. You're referring the contractor or myself to now me or my team to sell us to the client. And I think that is where there's a little bit of conversation. And I think that's why I keep bringing it up, because I want it to continue to be a good conversation. But I do think that there should be referral fees, and we've communicated about that. And I think that that's another conversation that builders and real estate agents should be able to openly have, because it can't just be, hey, I gave your name to somebody, I want a referral fee. There has to be an actual contract. Well, what if you just sent me 10 people that weren't even qualified or couldn't afford me?
So do you plan on paying the referral fee if they don't even go to close, just for sending them to you? A referral fee, in my opinion, is that only if it closes, or is it Oh, thank you for referring me. Here's some money.
Well, okay, let's use this as an example. Last week, I had two real estate agents that sent me someone. That's a referral because when they actually got on the phone with me, they wanted me to build a $275,000 house. That's not my niche. I'm not their builder. You know, that is, to me, that's just a possible sales lead.
Well,
that's
not okay. So let me rewind a little bit. I'm gonna rewind a little bit. So some of the things that you did say, so there's an assumption on your part in that. Well, let me start this. The first big reason to be paid is that the client is being even knowing about you from. You have an opportunity to have business with them through that. That's a big deal.
So you're saying that they should be paid on just a phone call, or are you saying if there is a contract that goes in place?
What I'm saying,
just to clarify for listeners, like what we're talking.
Yeah. What I am saying, I don't think it's going to be possible for you to manage and have an understanding of how good of a real estate agent or not that person is with your process. But what I will say is that one of the big reasons to pay the realtor is almost similar to the same reason that you would pay your marketing person to market for you. That you're going to spend thousands of dollars a monthly on your SEO. These are people out with active buyers that can bring business to you. So it's, to me, a marketing expense for a business to pay real estate agents who have active
buyers. So marketing companies aren't charging me $17,000.
Over a year's time? Oh, you're kidding me.
Right. But
anyway, let me just finish that. So there's that portion of it. And the next portion, which is the reason that builders do not really want a realtor involved is because, like you said, after that, we handle everything. You're not going to help them with their colors. You're not going to check the whatever. You're not going to do this. You're not going to do that. Wrong. Now that doesn't mean I'm going to be out at the site every day or whatever. But if there's any issues or any questions along the way that maybe that person needs a non-biased opinion on how a process is working or something is happening, I'm an advocate for that. So for example, if you go and put your slab out and y'all had agreed that you, and I'm just making this, and I don't even know if this is the thing you do, but I'm just making an example. You go lay a slab out and y'all agreed the slab is going to be in this spot, and your contractors go out and it's 2 feet in the wrong direction into a, you know, closer to a servitude, and they planned on doing something on the other side with a patio. I'm just making a scenario.
Yeah.
And that slab gets put down and it was a contractor mistake. And now we have a discrepancy. And I don't know which way that conversation could go, but my point is that they have now an advocate who has been around real estate, who has been around building, who has understands the process to where if they are in need of a non-biased or not even non-biased, a representation to help them along that process, because in that transaction, you're the licensed professional. They're not a licensed professional.
But there really wasn't a transaction that was made between the real estate agent and the contractor at that point, because the contract is between client and contractor.
And that's why it's important.
That states in my contract, at least, I don't know anybody else's contract, right? I can't speak for any other builder. I can only speak for myself. That they have representation through the attorney's office and legal team that is there at their expense and my expense. If there ever were to be any issues that were to arise. So when we have this conversation, my thought process is that it's another person in the everyday, day-to-day emails and communication between a client.
I get it.
And that is very tedious and cumbersome. And I don't find, nor does my legal team, honestly, find that that's necessary, because that's how much I've dived into it. I've had multiple conversations. I think for me, it's not about the representation side. You, any realtor or any builder can say, fine, you want to represent them? Fine. I'm just, if you want to, but I think most real estate agents are not going to care 3 months in what's really going on. They've moved on after that. The transactions happen, the clients with the builder, they moved on. They might come back and say, oh, how'd it go or whatever, but they're not going to be in the everyday, because the builder is just not going to include them. I don't need another person in the everyday day to day. I've got 50 subs that are in the everyday today, you know? I think that the part that is a good conversation to continue to keep having is the cost that either the builder or the client will acquire. Because if builders are honest with everyone, whether that's real estate agents or their clients, and it will be hard for them to do this, and I challenge them to do this, and I challenge clients to do this, ask the question that if there is a fee to be paid, where is it coming from? Because it either has to come out of the builder's margin. So if they're charging a 14, 16, 20, 30, wherever you are nationwide, whatever your markup is that real estate agent's fee coming out of that markup? Or are they rolling that cost in for the client?
Right.
And if builders are honest with themselves,
they're rolling it in.
They are rolling it into their client.
That's where I don't think it should be.
And that is where I have the challenge. And this is where I think you and I do see, because we've had this conversation. Our parish appraisal values are very, very tight here. We are just now starting to see an increase on our appraisal values. To roll in that percentage on a client, I can't do it. Because it won't appraise. So then at that point, I have to say,
it goes into your margin.
It goes into my margin. So if I'm saying that I'm going to make 14% on a house and I'm going to pay an agent 2.5% or 2%, then I have to say that I'm only going to make 12% right. on that house.
And as we know, and that's where the builder decision is, it's really a question of, do you value that sale enough to make 14 rather than 16? That's your own business decision. I am telling you that from a standpoint of, I know in my business, my value is at least 2%, 2.5%. I usually am 3%. So, but a new construction, I will say, typically the pay is less. And there's a few reasons for that. But one is because it's new. So you're not going to have inspection craziness. And,
right.
you know, it's a little bit more of a streamlined process. Now building actually, I mean, that just depends. If something goes wrong, it can go, you know, it can be really.
That's right.
But,
absolutely.
But I know just like, you know, your value.
That's right.
I know mine. And so, for example, whenever I negotiate, you know, I have what my value is as an agent when I'm representing somebody. If I'm having a listing agreement, I have what my value and what I bring to the table for the money that I'm getting paid. However, I also do realize that if I have a client that say I have a relationship with, and they're saying I'm gonna list 20 houses with you next year, I'm gonna give them some money off of my value,
right?
So to me, it's similar if you look at the realtor community as the, I'm gonna be bringing you more than one a year. Maybe not one real estate agent, but if you look at, I'm gonna offer this to the realtor community because I know that I'll get more than one deal a year. So, let me say one more thing too before. The other thing is when you're looking at this 2.5%, as we know, some builders have on the low, probably a 10% markup. Some builders on the high have a 25% markup, depending on the market you're in.
No, that's right.
So it's really about where does the value come
in. That's right. Because look, we've had this conversation before. If I'm building in a higher price per square foot appraisal area, then there's more room to move on those margins, right? Because I might be able to make, let's just say 18%, or a builder might be able to make 20%. And then 2% of that is not a big deal. But if I'm building a $450,000 house, let's use for an example, and the appraisal value and the margins only allow for 14, see, or even let's just say 12. Some areas it's 10-12%. Now you're looking at I'm undervaluing myself as a builder.
No, and that's where I'm saying it should not be rolled in. It should be rolled into the builder's cost. If you're normally taking a 15% markup, you just have to have an understanding that if you're taking a realtor referral, that it's going to be now 12.5 or 13, but I'm still willing to take that business knowing that there's a lot of realtors out there that I can build relationships with that will bring me business, and I'll make it up that percentage on the volume. You know, now if you're a builder doing 2 houses a year, you might have a different story. But if you're doing 15 houses a year and you can get 3 sales that you wouldn't have otherwise, that's a pretty good deal, you know?
Yeah, I think that it's just still an open conversation, because it has to, on my end, as you know, we're transparent with our clients. You went through the building process with us. We do not roll in anything on our line items. It is just a flat markup on our margin. And so it's hard for me to explain to a client that this is my value, because just like you have a value, I have a value. I know what my ROI is on a project. That I'm going to have to go up 2%.
But I don't think you should go up. I think you should hold your market. You and pay the realtor.
If you say that, then that means that I have to undervalue myself for a realtor that might bring me one project a year.
And that's where you're looking at it as one realtor. This is not a contract with one realtor. This is an open contract with a realtor saying, you bring me a deal, this is what you get paid. It's a open contract to the realtor community, not the one realtor. Now, if you get a good realtor like me, you might get more than one deal, you know, if you're paying them, you know, but the deal is, I don't, just like everybody else. And a lot of people, I mean, we don't, you know, we work, but we're also working to feed our families and our lifestyles.
It's worth something.
Yeah. Like you need to get paid.
Everybody does have to get paid.
I can tell you, just like you have your expense lines. I don't have to show it to all my clients, but just to even get in front of those clients to be able to service them.
Oh yeah, there's a cost.
There's a cost of my time. There's a cost of my marketing for people to approach me, for me to even be able to say, let me bring them to Erica.
Right.
I'm spending money on it. So at the end of the day, as a whole, I just think that.
So here's the real
bigger picture.
This is, you know? This is my real raw statement. And look, realtors in our community know where I stand on this topic. I continue to keep having this. I'm continuing to opening into expanding that and how we work and maneuver through that, through contracts, not through phone calls and just leads. We're not going to do that. Let me say that again for anyone that's listening. If you send out our name and it's just a call, and nothing ever happens, there is no referral for that. There is no fee for that. There is no nothing for that. If they come to the table and actually sign contracts, there are open conversations to what that looks like for sure. But my number one thing that I will let every agent know, whether there is a referral fee or not, I don't need you to babysit me for a year. This is my niche. This is what I'm good at. I want you to, if you're comfortable enough to give that client to a builder, I feel like you should feel comfortable enough to let that leash go once that contract is signed. Now, if there's ever something that comes up at the end and you feel like you would need to be involved in that, I don't think that by any means you should not. But there, at that point, I can tell you this office does not need one more person to email and to answer. We just don't. And I think that that is some of the, and this isn't me. I am the vice chair of the North Shore Homebuilders Association. We have had multiple conversations with builders.
Of course.
That becomes another task. And there are so many tasks that come along with building, especially when you're building 14, 15 houses a year. I do think that relationships between builders and realtors is a necessity, especially in the market that we're in now. We all might have been able to do it by ourselves before, but I think that we all are going to have to come to the table and really have some open conversation.
And let me just tell you, even more so, big picture thinking, take care of and work with your realtors when the market is good. And also work with them when it's bad. We're in this together.
That's right.
But that's another thing that happens is builders tend to not want to work with real estate agents when the market is good and they feel like they don't need the leads. But when the market is bad, that's when all of a sudden now they're going to pay the value, right?
Right, to get them to come.
Yeah. So what I would say about that is good luck with managing other people. I mean, that's impossible. You have so many different personalities. Even in my job, there are times, look, I deal with that every day. That's part of business.
Oh yeah.
It's clients, like, you, so what I will tell you is there's one thing when I'm showing a house, the worst thing that you want is the mother-in-law, the uncle, the aunt, the whatever, giving all these ideas and da da da. It drives you nuts. But at the end of the day, you know what? This is part of this process. I'll work through it because I want them to get what they want. And I want to have the business and make sure that they shout from the rooftops how awesome I was. It's part of business.
Absolutely.
And you have to decide if you want to be a part of that or not. And you don't know what you're missing. I guess it's just out there. You don't know. Because if you say, well, we're not going to really pay realtors right now, that could leave a stain to be like, okay, well, I'm not even going to think about them in the future. When, you know, is it really that difficult to... Sometimes you might just be adding a realtor on the email and you'll never get correspondence. Sometimes you might have a realtor that's type A that wants to be involved in the piece. Yeah, but I'm not.
I'm just joking.
No, I'm very strong when I believe in something and if I have to step in and I'll pay attention to things. But I generally I feel like I'm good with having a long leash type of thing. You know? But your personal.
Do you think that that's like something that builders and real estate agents should meet before and set what those expectations would be before the client gets involved? Because that's one thing I know I'm really funny about, and what you're funny about is like, what is the perception? I don't like chaos. I don't like things look like nobody knows what's going on, or what. I just think that maybe that would be an open conversation.
I think from a agent, the best thing that I could recommend a builder to get agent business would be to walk into a real estate office and go and let them know what you do, how your process is, and how you pay them, and for them to get paid what they have to do. So,
and setting those expectations too, right?
Yeah. So realizing but with that, you can't say the expectation is for you not to get involved. That's the problem, because the deal is the reason that they're there is, especially if there's a need of involvement, which of course is not to the benefit of the builder side, but if it is something that is a discrepancy, we'd hope that you're perfect and nothing ever happens.
No, I'm not perfect.
Right. But what I'm saying is if there is a discrepancy, they need to be involved. Now, to micromanage on how those realtors' personalities are, that's the life of business. So some of them you're going to not want to pay because you're like, that.
Sorry, it's not about paying. It's more or less about that.
It's an extra step.
Not only that, not the extra step, but everybody's personality is different. And yes, that's part of managing. That's part of business. That's part of any offer that you work in. But in the same token, as the builder that has the contract with the client, we have to have the say. I mean, we are the ones that are managing the project. And I think that is, again, I think that would be a meeting to have with realtors to set up. What do you think your expectation in this project would be if this worked out? Or what does this look like if we're going to work together long term?
Well, this is the deal. I think the first step to even have those conversations is to let people know that you're open to have them. And how do you open? You actually pay them for their work. So if they bring a lead to the table, you're calling them and saying, okay, I got this lead from you. This is our process. This is how we pay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how this. Let's talk about this how we go
forward. Just so all the listeners know, I have talked to many builders nationwide. Some of them are paying, some of them are not. So I think it's still just a great conversation. I think I do. And I'm so glad that you're open to continuing to have the conversation, educate, and to keep both sides of the door open so that we can continue the conversation.
We're both a necessity to... In my opinion, we're both a necessity to get people into houses. So we're tackling it from just a different angle, you know, but at the same time, I think we're better to work together. And if I know in my business, I don't think the short term, I'm thinking long term and relationships,
Sure. Relationships.
I'm not counting every dollar, but I also want to be paid for my work just like you did, you know? But the main goal is that it's a win-win for everybody. The people who are doing the work, but more importantly, the client to make sure that they are having an easy process or being serviced the way and getting a good product. So, yeah, so I think it should be a group effort, you know?
I love it. Yeah. And we're getting close to the end of our time. And so I want to tell you, thank you for coming and being so much fun and being so open and honest about you and I's conversations and where we go. And hopefully some of the nuggets that we dropped today, people will use and call. But why don't you tell everybody where everybody can find you?
All right. Well, my name is John Exnicious, the Exnicious Group. I'm going to spell that really slow. Exnicious. Yeah, that's it. It sounds like a sneeze. But Exnicious Group, and we're on Instagram, Facebook, exniciousgroup.com. Also, just for a little side note, I also own Airbnbs in downtown Hammond, as well as on the river, on the Sycamore River. And I also have something in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. So that can be found at Hammond, Airb, and the letter NB.com. So there's some really cool places if you ever want to come see this cool town that I live in. But my team, we do business from New Orleans to Baton Rouge, St. Tammany, Tangipahoa Parish. I'm a proud, what is this when you live somewhere? I live in Tangipahoa Parish. I'm a proud resident. I should know that as a real estate agent. So I'm a proud resident of Tangipahoa Parish. However, I'm from New Orleans and I love both sides of the lake. We'll help you anywhere. Exnicious Group.
Yes.
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services.
John, thank you so much. It's been so much fun. And I appreciate everybody coming and taking their hour and some today to hang out with us. And I hope that you gathered all kinds of knowledge. And I hope that you embrace, empower, and elevate yourself every day.
Boom.
Thank you for joining us on this exhilarating episode of Escapes. We hope that you've been inspired, empowered, and ready to embark on your own journey. The power to escape and redefine is within you. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review Escapes to help us reach more incredible women and men like you. You can also follow me on Facebook at ENG Designs and Construction and Instagram at Build with ENG. Stay tuned for more amazing stories, insights, and strategies in our upcoming episodes. Together, we'll rewrite the scripts of our unknown possibilities. Until next time, this is Erica Hemphill from Escapes. Your adventure continues, and we can't wait to be a part of it. Until next time, continue to embrace, empower, and elevate.